Okay, good on you, Dave. Tony Martin is here to co-host the conversation now. He's an election observer par excellence.
Hello, John. Sorry, have I missed the conversation about easements?
I'm sorry.
Because yes. I've got so much easements material.
To say nothing of covenants.
That's straight in the bin, is it?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's a waste of half an hour, right?
But you can leave now.
What's going on in the election? Cash giveaways? Has that started yet?
At MasterChef, we're going to merge the two and decide they'll have a bake-off.
That's the way. I think the party that will win will be the party that can deliver a pub-style Palmer at home. That's what the public seem to want, John.
Troy in Brunswick, morning.
Yes, good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, look, I'd like to see a little bit more visionary statements being made in terms of what the plans are by the various parties, rather than these fear campaigns, which, of course, have always been historically, even when there was the Howard government and so forth, they were infamous for these fear campaigns. But, look, I think the electorate really wants to hear the types of policies that are going to be put out there to address the major issues that we're dealing with, not these virtual patronising and oftentimes comments that are driven by what popular sort of feedback coming from various commercial media and so forth seems to be driving.
Well, we'll see whether you get your wish or not. And Valerie on the Bass Coast. Morning, Valerie.
Morning. Very quickly, John. They keep talking, the Liberal Party keep talking about lowering debt, but correct me if I'm wrong, we hit a global financial crisis. We're the envy of the world in the sense that we've got very low unemployment. We handled it, we came through this very well indeed. Without that debt, it couldn't have happened. So I really don't know why they're getting their knickers in a twist about it.
Well, because as with all political parties during election campaigns, they'll pull on whatever bow they think might sing the right tune.
But it's the wrong bow, I think.
Okay.
Change to another one.
Good on you. Thank you, Valerie. Text messages galore. So it's okay for Labor to encourage their employees to continue to bring Tony's swimming attire into the discussion. That's sexist too. Tony Martin, stay with us for a fabulous conversation hour coming up after the news.
AFL. Sunday starts with the Inquisition, then the clash to determine the double chance. The Western Bulldogs versus Fremantle.
Grandstand AFL.
100% pure footy.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
And on Grandstand Digital.
11 o'clock news time.
The Conversation Hour with John Fain. On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
11:05. Welcome to the Conversation Hour today. Tony Martin, my co-host. We're going to meet Eddie Perfect, the performer, and one of the world's leading designers, Chris Bangle, is in town for a big design conference and joins us between now and 12 o'clock as well. Julia Gillard, the Prime Minister, during an election campaign, is about to address a media throng at a high school in Richmond, New South Wales. We heard earlier this morning on 774 ABC Melbourne, and you would have heard in the news from Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey at their press conference, where they talked about the economy and accused the Labor government of wasting money and borrowing more money than the nation can afford. Ms Gillard undoubtedly will want to respond, and we'll see if we can grab some of that for you once she approaches the lectern. Tony Martin, good morning to you.
Good. Nice to see you, John. Sorry, I am on tenterhooks waiting for to see what happens. Cash giveaways, I'm expecting.
Edge of chair stuff, isn't it?
Fantastic. I just keep, since that Hawk movie the other night, I can't watch any footage from the election without thinking, who's going to play them? Who's going to play them in the movie? Surely Jane Turner.
For Julia Gillard.
For Julia Gillard. And staying with
Noise. Noise.
And Peter Rosethorne as Tony Abbott. Tony Abbott. Surely.
Too tall.
Has to be.
He's too tall.
Has to. I'm looking up there, and there's Joe Hockey lurking in the background. I think I've said this before, that I will vote for Joe Hockey if he will go to work just for 1 week in a full Fred Flintstone costume. Wouldn't that be great? And not refer to it, not say anything about it, just have it on in the house.
You're a wicked man. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I've been working on ABC's The Librarians, John.
Okay, is there another series coming then?
There is a third series coming before the end of the year. 8 episodes this time. And
are you performing?
Well, no, because I was in the last series. I don't know if you'd recall my 5-second performance as Vince Colosimo's boyfriend.
No, I missed that. And yeah. I like the show and I watch it, but I don't remember you in it.
I didn't have my glasses on. A lot of people didn't recognise me, but that was me having my ass grabbed by Colosimo. He's all hands. Watch out if you're working with him. But so I couldn't really appear this time, but they've let me direct 2 episodes this time because Wayne Hope, who's in it, you would remember his frequently nude performances.
Yeah, he's terrific.
In the past. He directs all of it himself, and he's slowly been getting more and more to do with every series. So with this series, because there's 8 episodes, he decided to let me do 2 episodes and then keep an eye on him when he was on screen in the other 6 episodes. And his character, I'm not allowed to say too much, but his character gets his old high school band, garage band, back together from the 80s. So
you're bossing everyone around?
Kind of, yeah.
Have you ever done it before?
I've done a movie. I've done 2 movies, one of which never came out, and I've done a lot of comedy sketches. But I've never directed anything where it's someone else's work.
Yep.
So that's scary, holding someone else's baby and hoping you're not going to drop it.
How'd you go?
I haven't seen any. We haven't got to it. I've done episode 5 and 8, so they're doing them in order, and they've only edited the first 2. First 2 are fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just that bit where I'm waiting to get into the editing room and hope that it all cuts together. But I mean, it's a great show, and
couldn't you put yourself in for another couple of cameos?
Well, we'll see. It's hard to. I think I am seen from behind, and I'm doing an off-screen voice at one point. But it's just weird. Don't you find it weird when somebody plays? Comes back as a different character in the series. The old days in Australian TV, that happened all the time.
Recycling, yeah.
Bill Hunter was in. Told me he was in 16 different episodes of Homicide, killed in 11 of them. But that doesn't happen. That freaks people out when you do that now.
Yeah, I can't understand why.
Although, hang on, just while we're going nerdish, Deadwood, the show Deadwood, there's a character, there's an actor who plays 2 different characters in that series.
And most people don't follow it as closely as the people who make it.
No.
Think they do.
Well, no, but it would be weird.
I hate to disappoint you, but it's not the sort of... Well, I mean, a lot of people just have the telly on in the corner of the room and keep a sort of vague interest in what's happening.
But the Librarians does have a big following, and I think if I showed up as a removalist, they'd go, well, why is Vince Colosimo's gay boyfriend suddenly shifting that piano? That would be odd,
It might make sense. There could be lots of gay removalists. Hey, what was the other show Wayne Hope was in with Kim Gingell, which was about the
very small
businessman?
Very small business. I think it's a great show. Very
I really
underrated.
Enjoyed that too.
Massively underrated.
Didn't get much marketing or other support.
No, it should have had a second. That hasn't been given a second series.
That was funny. And the other one that's recently been on TV and has disappeared, of course, is the one about the Adam Zwar, the
Lowdown.
The Lowdown.
Well, that's
about
only
the tabloid newspaper reporter.
That's just finished, so that I think that is up for a second series.
But I
tell you, if you can get the Very Small Business DVD, that I only just saw that recently, the extras on that are probably the funniest thing I've seen all year. And do you remember, I don't know if you remember in the series, Kim Gingell's character was writing press ads.
Yeah. He was a sort of serious journalist who'd had some sort of a nervous breakdown and was trying to find a way back into active work.
And he was a copywriter, and you know, I used to have to write ads and do that thing where you have to call up the client and read the commercial out, and they're just counting how many times their name is mentioned. Pardon me. In the show, Kim would have to call up and read out these incredibly flowery, overwritten ads. On the extras for Very Small Business is one where he calls up Club X and reads out incredibly flowery ad that he's written
for the sex industry,
for the things that they sell there. And that is, you'll be on the floor laughing at that. I'm trying to get Wayne to put that onto YouTube, actually.
Just on a standalone?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, well, watch this space.
So that's been good.
Excellent. Good to know that you're in active employment, Mr. Martin, because more than most, you deserve it.
Thank you. I've got 2 broken ribs at the moment. If you notice, I don't know if you can see, I'm sitting awkwardly. Had a night out drinking with Judith Lucy, and I know she is known for that. I don't want to perpetrate that reputation. She'd actually been not drinking for quite a while.
I thought she'd sworn it off for a while.
She had, because she's written an entire TV series, which is going to be great. But
you led her astray.
Well, it was something to celebrate, so we went out, and I did the right thing and got a taxi home. And somewhere between being delivered home by the taxi and getting into bed, I've managed to break 2 ribs, and I've got no idea how it's happened. The security tape inside my head has been erased. But as you know, you told me you've broken ribs.
I have twice had some problems with ribs. Yeah, it hurts.
It's a nightmare, and there's nothing you can do.
No, not a lot.
Just not reach for high shelves is basically the only option you've got for 6 weeks.
Tony Martin, my co-host. If Julia Gillard comes to the microphone at some point, we'll cross to her press conference in New South Wales live. It's 12 minutes past 11. Eddie Perfect and Chris Bangle, our guests on The Conversation Hour today on 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, digital radio and streaming on the internet at abc.net.au/Melbourne.
The Time Lord is back on DVD and Blu-ray. Doctor Who Series 5 Volume 1 stars Matt Smith as the new Doctor and Karen Gillan as his spirited sidekick, Amy Pond.
20 minutes to the end of the world.
Doctor, stop. Whatever you're doing, stop it now.
Also available is Doctor Who The Complete Specials, featuring the final adventures of David Tennant as the Doctor.
So, I'm the Doctor, and you are?
Doctor Who Series 5 Volume 1 and The Complete Specials from ABC Shops, Centres and ABC Shop Online.
Curtis Mayfield with Move On Up. You're on The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. I'm John Fain. Tony Martin's my co-host. Our first guest joining us in just a moment, but literally just moments ago, Julia Gillard started a press conference where she's campaigning in New South Wales. Early this morning, Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey tried to change the agenda from industrial relations to the economy, and Julia Gillard has now responded.
Can I say it's great to be here at Richmond High School. I'm joined by my colleague, the Minister for Education, Simon Crean. I'm also joined by our great Labor candidate, Susan Templeman, who is seeking to represent this community in Macquarie, including this school. And we've been here today inspecting the Trades Training Centre development being funded under our Trades Training Centres in Schools program. And here at this school today, I'd like to make an important announcement about building on that Trades Training Centre development. I'm, of course, passionate, absolutely passionate, about making sure every child gets the opportunity to have a first-class education, gets the opportunity to get real skills so that when they leave school, they can get a successful start in life, whether that's going into the workforce, going into university, or going into trades training, into an apprenticeship. Today in Australia, if you're a student in high school who aspires to go to university, the pathway through is pretty clear. You study hard at year 12, you focus on that all-important university entrance score, and you go to university, and your university education builds on the skills that you developed at school. Studying law, building on the skills you developed studying English, obviously going into science, building on the skills you developed in school in maths and science. What's less clear at the moment is how you build on education at school in vocational education and training and build it into a pathway to a trade. And so today I am announcing that a re-elected Labor government, a re-elected Gillard government, would introduce a national trade cadetships program. Now, the way this national trade cadetships program would work is we would have our experts at our Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority work with industry to develop a cadetship program that recognises vocational education and training at school.
Currently, Julia Gillard addressing a school's press conference. Not responding on the economy, as was expected, but trying to shift the agenda away from the economy, which Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey were doing earlier this morning. We'll keep an ear across it, and I'm sure there'll be more coverage in ABC News and Current Affairs throughout the course of the day. John Fain with you, with Tony Martin, my co-host on The Conversation Hour today, and our first guest is Eddie Perfect, the Melbourne performer, cabaret artist, and now mentor to future stars. Good morning to you, Eddie, and welcome back to The Conversation Hour.
Thanks, John and Tony. Thanks very much.
Wonderful to have you here. I see you're performing with the National Academy of Music, the students, and the Brodsky Quartet, doing something somewhat out of left field for Eddie Perfect. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it kind of seems slightly logical to me, but that's what happens on the inside. I've had this amazing opportunity, and I can't quite believe that it's happened, to collaborate with the Brodsky Quartet, who are a world-famous UK string quartet who are coming to Australia to do a variety of concerts, including this one.
Proper musicians?
Yeah, proper musicians who have, apart from their intense classical repertoire, have collaborated with people like Björk and Sting and Elvis Costello with the Juliet Letters, and I've been aware of since hearing their version of Hyper Ballad on Björk's post-album from the 90s, and so it's an incredible opportunity, and originally it was this part of the Melbourne Cabaret Festival. Why don't we team you up with the Brodskys? You can do some of your old material, we'll rearrange it for string quartet. And I thought that would be a wasted opportunity and I should write a new piece. So I decided to write a piece about Mentone, which is the suburb that I come from in Melbourne, and mainly because...
You and Shane Warne, famously.
Yeah, well, he was sort of more Black Rock boy, but he went to Mentone Boys Grammar, and I went to St. Bede's College, so we were literally a stone's throw away. And it's a place that I always had really kind of hated when I couldn't wait to get out of, because it's a very sports orientated place. You know, if you're good at cricket and footy, you know, you had a wonderful time, and I just sort of found it, you know, it was all yin and no yang, and I had to get out of there.
Hang on, so what you're telling us is that the Brodsky Quartet are coming out to do a show about Mentone.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's the only real way you can get away with doing a show about Mentone.
Philip Glass will be here doing Dingley before too long. You wait.
I would I like to see that. So this is kind of like about making peace with the place that you come from. I mean, everyone knows what it's like to come from somewhere. It's just burnt into your brain. Like, you just walk past the same things every day, and that's your childhood. And while it wasn't a bad childhood, we weren't poor, we weren't rich, you know, we weren't in the city, we weren't in Frankston. We were really middle class, and we're right in the middle, so I thought I should write a show about growing up in middle class suburbia, because quite frankly, there's not enough romanticism injected into food courts and tenpin bowling alleys. And
Mentone has always missed its due recognition.
Yeah, it's always been it's ever since its inception in the 1880s out of the land boom. It's always been a bit of a aspirational place. All of the streets are named after Italian cities. So I remember riding my bike along Milan Street, and there's Venice, and Florence Street is the main street where all the shops are. There's nothing particularly European about any of it. But
what's on the when it says "Welcome to Mentone"? What's the logo?
Oh God, I couldn't even tell you. It's the city of Kingston. I don't think they have a "Welcome to Mentone." I mean, it's just the next suburb. They have railway tracks. You cross the railway tracks.
Wow. Tea Tree and Flathead.
Yeah, you get to the Red Rooster and you're in Mentone.
Fantastic. Mm. Now, are you going to be... I have to ask you something. I saw Shane Warne, the musical. I loved it. But I was sitting there the whole time going, what sort of conditioning do you do for your voice? That was an amazing... I'm sitting there going, does he do this every night, eight shows a week?
Yeah, it was actually kind of non-sustainable, that show, because on my day off on the Monday, I just had to go to the osteo and get pummeled back into some kind of show.
Really?
Head off to do it again, and by the time it finished, I was really happy to stop it, because probably part of the writing, I should have shared the songs around a bit with other characters. It was a really, really big thing, and because it was pretty much a rock show, well, rock and gospel and soul, it was a really massive thing.
Yeah, so were you not speaking when you were on the stage? Did you have to?
No, I've got a pretty robust, having sung a lot. Having sort of sung every day for the last 15 years, I've got a pretty strong set of vocal cords. So it takes a lot for me to go down and not be able to sing. So I got through every show. I didn't have to take any off, I don't think. But it hurt.
Yeah, I used to work with a guy who does the voiceover, the one I always mention. Have you ever rendered a video that wasn't quite right?
And
I used to watch him working, and he would have a little jar of honey that he would sort of ladle down his throat before his voiceover. I'm not sure if that does anything.
What sort of honey? New Zealand honey?
I'm not sure.
Tasmanian honey?
I didn't
need to know.
He was a scary guy. I didn't know.
Probably would be if he's in charge of all that piracy.
That's right. Probably Manuka honey. A lot of people eat Manuka honey.
Yeah, I swear by it.
Singers do that, and there's, you don't have to go into any dressing room and you can see all sorts of weird vaporizers.
Yeah, exactly.
And steamers. Steam's good. Steam's good.
Because it's warm.
Yeah, but then,
big mistake, people drink cold water, and that's, of course, terrible.
That's
for
the worst
cords.
Thing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I mean, some people warm up with a Coke and a cigarette.
Right.
And they're ready to go.
Bang.
Not me. I don't drink Coke.
I'll drink.
No, I don't drink Coca-Cola, that's for sure. But, it's always, once you're singing a lot, it's fine. It's fine. But this show, this Songs from the Middle show, I've taken it a lot easier on myself, having with the memory of Shane Warne the musical in mind. It's sort of much more suited to my voice, which just sits pretty low.
And what's it like being a role model?
A role model? Are you talking about this Ultimate School Musical thing that I did?
Well, no, but working with the students at the National Academy, they're being told, look, here's a successful performer, locally bred, locally grown. Here's a career path that you can all aspire to, and there's Eddie Perfect on a pedestal.
Well,
Eddie Pedestal.
It's a bit like that, but it's also the Australian National Academy of Music are training the most elite classical musicians in this country. I mean, and you go down there, and it's terrifying for someone like me, who is a completely self-taught musician who can sight read a bit. If it wasn't my show, I would have been fired about 15 times over, because I'm the one on listen to back to recordings of rehearsals. I'm the one making all the mistakes, and they can pick up the most intense piece of Ian Granage's arrangements, which are incredible, by the way, and sight read them first time. And I was thinking, geez, Ian, you put a lot of detail into the score. Like, there's arguments about what's forte and what's mezzo forte and what the difference is. So they read everything. They read expression marks. They read dynamics as well as the notes. It's just unbelievable. So I don't think I'm doing much mentoring except maybe saying if you can compose, you can get away with a lot more than if you just play.
Right.
That's the lesson, I think.
When you say self-taught, how hard is it to self-teach yourself to play, say, the piano?
I don't think it's hard to learn instruments. I think that there's a lot of rubbish espoused about talent. There is obviously a degree of talent with stuff, you know, but
But you do hear,
but it's true though. You don't find talented swimmers because, you know, someone just decides that they want to fall into a pool one day and go, oh, look, I've found. But that happens with music. People think that you have to be ordained with this God-given gift to start, to give it a go. And everyone should have access to music. And I taught myself to play piano because I wanted to. And I just sort of, from the ages of about 15, I sat at the piano and I played and I enjoyed it. And I listened to music and I got a good set of ears. So that's the way I taught myself. Yeah. But a lot of people go, oh, I'd like to learn piano, or I'd like to learn guitar. And you, at parties, and you speak to someone and you say to them, and they say, oh, yeah, I could have been a musician, but they didn't because they didn't want to. It's really, you can learn guitar, I reckon, in three, this is, I'm going to put this out there.
Yeah, right.
3 months. You could get online, and if you were dedicated, you could teach yourself to play all of the open string chords on a guitar in 3 months. No worries. And then you would be able to play
guitar. Sort of an hour a day or something?
Yeah. Yeah. If you cared enough, you'd be able to learn to do it. I know people that have taught themselves to play an instrument in much, much less time. So if you get over the whole, I have to have, you know, be struck by the god of the lightning from the god of musical endowment to be able to play, you know, you're never going to do it.
But there are some of us who, even with an hour a day for 3 months, would end up still struggling to get beyond two or three chords.
I don't know. I reckon even a completely non-musical person could get a lot further than they think.
I've always wanted to learn to play the piano, but I used to live next door to a guy who was learning to play the piano. It was the most annoying sound.
Yeah, it
and
is.
I just went, I don't want to do that to my neighbours. I don't think I want to.
Drums or trumpets would be worse.
Put myself in there for drums.
The recorder's bad, and the violin's terrible. You know, the violin's terrible as well. But you know, I believe everyone can sing.
Yeah.
And I believe everyone has some access to music. I mean, some musical faculty. I mean, it's, if you take away the expectation of everyone has to be amazing at something, I think that, you know, everyone has the ability to do something.
Most people can sing in the car.
Yep.
I find the car is the best place to learn to do everything.
Yeah, if you are a singer, the car is just awesome. Singing in the car is the best.
If you're on your own.
You can have an audience in the car.
I think there's a United Nations Convention on Torture that forbids you confining people into enclosed space and subjecting them to some of the sorts of singing that some of us, in fact, would therefore be inflicting on the other people in the car, Eddie.
Possibly. My partner sings in the car, and she sings along to Blondie and to the Bangles, and she loves it. She's really down in her voice. But yeah.
Well, maybe she can sing. That's the difference. Eddie Perfect, Songs from the Middle, paying tribute to Mentone, amongst other things. Eddie Perfect with the Brodsky Quartet and the students, believe it or not, from the National Academy of Music. There are two performances only, and one of them is sold out. So you can't go on Sunday, but you can still get tickets at the South Melbourne Town Hall for the Monday, the 26th of July performance. That's the only one where there are tickets left for Eddie Perfect, the Brodsky Quartet and the students from the Australian National Academy of Music. Monday, the 26th of July at 8:30. There are still some tickets left, although not many. And you, if you're quick, might be one of those that makes that a sold-out concert as well. Eddie, stay with us. The world's leading designer, I think I'll call him. Chris Bangle, a legend in design circles, joins us as our next guest, Tony Martin, my co-host, on The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria Digital Radio, and streaming on the internet at abc.net.au/Melbourne. It's 29 minutes to 12.
Change your life. Change the planet. Grow organic. Organicgardener.com.au. The team at ABC's Organic Gardener are thrilled to announce the launch of the magazine's new website. In addition to the print magazine, the website will keep you up to date with organic gardening, lifestyle and living. On the new website, you'll find blogs, selected articles from previous issues and practical gardening tips from the Gardening Australia TV show. Visit organicgardener.com.au.
I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now, right away. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away.
Every night and day I go and stay. I'm coming home, baby.
Come on home.
Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm waiting here for you.
I'm coming home now real soon.
You've been gone.
Coming home, baby, now.
You don't know what I'm going through.
I'm coming home, I know I'm overdue.
Since you went away.
Expect me any day now real soon. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm praying every night.
And everything is gonna be fine.
Please come on.
Coming home, baby, now.
I want to feel you hold me tight.
Expect to see me now anytime.
When I'm in your arms,
you're in my arms, I'll be fine. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm counting every day.
I'm coming home now, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You come home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
And baby, let me hear you say.
I'm coming home, you hearing what I say.
That you're coming home.
And I never will go. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm waiting at the door.
They can't hold me back now, no. I'm pressing on, baby, now.
And pacing up and down the floor.
Oh, hear me holler and hear me roar.
Say you'll be with me.
Gonna be with you evermore. I'm coming home.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
Oh, baby, say you're coming home.
That's what I say I'm coming home.
Something's wrong.
The road is long, baby, now.
Who wants to either ride or phone?
I'm coming home and never more to roam.
Baby, tell me you're.
Baby, I'm for sure coming. I'm coming home, baby, now.
Come on home.
I'm coming home, baby, now.
Mel Torme with Coming Home, and how appropriate that is for Eddie Perfect, who's going to be performing songs about songs from the middle about Mentone with the Brodsky Quartet Monday, July the 26th at the South Melbourne Town Hall. Tony Martin's my co-host. I'm John Fain, and we're now joined by one of the world's leading designers. Chris Bangle is in Australia to provide people who pay a lot of money to go to a conference with insights into the world that he inhabits and is very much the global leader in. You get him absolutely free on the Conversation Hour today. Chris Bangle, welcome back to an ABC Radio studio.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Wonderful to see you. Last time you were here, you were in the employ of an unnamed luxury car company in Europe.
Why, you getting in BMW? Why? Sorry.
We can cope. We can cope. You've since parted and now free to talk about things from an independent perspective. How do you see the future of mobility, first of all, given that you've come out of that big car company environment?
Yeah, thank you for saying environment, because BMW is not that big a car company as car companies go. It's sweet and tight. It's a different type of perspective when you're not in the car industry per se. That's for sure. And I try not to talk about the word car or the word automobile. I like to use personal emotional mobility as a way of saying it, because as soon as you say the word car, everybody knows what it looks like. It's got to have a fender. It's got to have an ashtray. It's got to have all this stuff. But the issues of getting around in the future and having fun at it and enjoying it and feeling involved in it, it's got to be more than that.
Bikes, surely that's the future, really, isn't it?
Bikes are the future.
Bikes? Are we going back to bikes soon?
You mean bicycles or motorbikes?
The oil's got about 2 weeks, hasn't it? Really? Isn't that what's going on?
Well, this is like a major bike environment out here. Every other person I meet is, I'm a new biker. I'm into the biker thing. The bikes are everything. Well, they're having some issues with your bike lanes, I've found out.
Oh, minor teething troubles, but the biggest one is the spate of injuries. But we're coming to terms with how you share the tarmac between cars and bicycles. That's a major problem too. Yeah. Do you see a future for the bicycle in the urban environment?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And probably a little bit more guerrilla action. You guys take over a few more lane space and you'll have it. Of course, then sooner or later you're going to have to tax them because somebody has to pay for those roads. That makes it really quiet. Ooh,
So registration for bicycles.
Well, I just asked a young woman recently, if you had a chip on your bike that let the cars know you were there, okay, like an RFID chip, something like that, which would help them avoid you, but would also let the government know where you were, would you still want it? Absolutely not. You know, so there's some interesting technical issues that are possible, but then have other side effects.
So how does that work? So you've got a chip in your bike, so someone's sitting in their car and they know you're coming up behind them. They're not going to just open the door, as so often. Most bike accidents are just people opening the door, isn't it? That's really what it is.
That is probably quite often. Or you're turning, let's see, in this country, you'd probably be turning to the left, and you don't realize there's a bike coming up next to you because you're not aware that it's coming up the side. Cars have things on them to make you aware for lane changing that there's a car coming up on you. I mean, you can buy that on a BMW today, at Mercedes, other companies. But if you had a chip in the bikes, which was telling the car quite a ways away that, you know, look, I'm coming, I'm here, etc.
Beep, 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 beep sort of thing, yeah?
No, it doesn't have to tell you anything. Just maybe lets the car know, and the car just doesn't let some things happen.
No, sorry, from the instrument panel of the car, the driver is alerted with a beep, beep, beep noise that there's a cyclist at the left rear blind spot or something like that.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be a light, in the mirrors like they do today, etc., like that. A vibration in the steering wheel. You don't have to tell everybody with a beep, beep, beep. There's other ways to do it. But to do that means you have to, equip the bikes with something, right? And once you equip it for that, it's like your cell phones. Your cell phones not only let you talk, but they let everybody know where you are. A GPS location can be located by other people too. So the whole idea of information exchange, at least in the car world, has this offset of, okay, you tell them something, but they know something about you too.
Do people care really about that sort of thing? Is it still an issue? Privacy, security?
It was to the young lady this morning. I found that quite interesting.
She's a spy. She's a bicycling spy.
That's right.
Hey, I've got a question for you, Chris. Why is it, this is me out of complete ignorance, right? I always found it slightly disappointing, the development of the automobile or the car, even though they're dirty words, over time, because it seems like we've gone, okay, here's a horse and cart, now let's put an engine on it, and let's, because I drive from Hillsville to Melbourne, where I work, and there's just massive cars with one person in them, and they're not getting any smaller, and there's all these spare seats in them all the time. How come that is the case? Why aren't we just getting single little pod cars? Why are cars look like the way they do, and why is it taking so long to get them to be more practical?
That's a really, really good question. Actually, about 15 questions in one there. That's pretty. You summed up the entire 120 years of the automobile, though, by saying horse, engine, too much metal, engine, car. You know, you did that quite well. Two things. One's why they look like what they do, and the other is why they are what they are. Okay, can we separate the two? Why they are what they are is for a whole bunch of reasons that people don't want to know about, but are there anyway, because they paid some legislator to make a law to say we need this kind of safety, we need this type of emissions issues, etc. And when you answer those problems that maybe you don't care about or know about with technology, it winds up being a really big box. Okay, and cars are in fact quite safe. You have to admit that. They really are quite safe. On the other hand, maybe you don't need all that, and you'd like it a lot smaller package. Unfortunately, smaller doesn't mean cheaper, because actually it's the same amount of money you pretty much put out for all that stuff, whether you add a few inches or centimeters of sheet metal or not. So that's one of the issues, is what's it worth to you?
Right.
But the other one you asked was, why does it look like what it looks like? Which is more interesting to me as a designer. And there I would say there's two reasons for that. One is how you physically make a car. When cars were made out of wood, they look like little houses. When they shifted to metal, they began to become sculptural boats, etc. Now they look like refrigerators, basically. That's how you physically make them. The other is what it means to you. When cars start to mean something else to you, other than maybe an extension of your penis or whatever else that people have, it's big long hood out in front of them, then they can start to take on different shapes.
And will they?
Oh, I think so. I really do. The work that I've been able to do over this last year outside of the industry has been with places like MIT and with the Singaporean government on the idea of what is mobility in the future. And then you hear a lot of voices from young people that don't really register on the automotive scene today, but they have a completely different view of the world for tomorrow.
What view is that?
Well, it's a world, for instance, with a much higher value on sharing. Okay, sharing is really, really important. They're used to it in music. They're used to shared files. Everything on the internet is about sharing, etc. But I don't see any barriers to that in their physical world.
These community cars, which you use, you book it for a trip that you're going to do, rather than owning the car, that sort of thing?
Well, that's the start of it today. But if you extrapolate that to tomorrow, let's go a little bit further ahead, and you ask yourselves, what's important about a car to people today? What's really important? It turns out the trunk on a car, the boot, is one of the most important things. They use cars as a big thing to put stuff in. They just carry all their stuff around in it. Okay, if we're going to share cars, then the design challenge is, where do we put our stuff? You know, you've got an iPod, or you've got some kind of a personal device that has your entire digital life in it. All the music that you've made is all in there. But where are you putting all that stuff in your life? And a lot of people, they just pile it in their cars.
Permanently.
Well, yeah, it tends to drag it around. So in a world where we don't have that many, let's say, electric batteries and electric engines to go around, and we're going to need to share these things, one thing that people won't want to share is my trunk space.
So you have, what, like a piece of luggage that you move from module to module, powered module to powered module?
Could be.
Along with yourself, like a pram almost. You put it into a powered chassis.
You've seen the presentation.
No.
Isn't that fair? Well,
I've not seen anything.
I'll have you think about something, though. There are some environments where everybody has one of those. Everybody does. They carry them around. You probably never even noticed it. The airport. Everybody in an airport today has got a trolley, right? A carry-on bag with little wheels. 15 years ago, nobody had one. All right. And now it's become ubiquitous. You don't even notice it. So if you project that forward, I mean, little kids today used to wear backpacks to go to school, at least in Europe. Now they carry a little roll-on bag.
Yep.
Right, because there's more stuff in it than what they want on their backs, right? So that idea that maybe the future of the car is actually the airplane carry-on trolley was the basis of our work we did for Singapore for personal emotional mobility in 2050.
So do you get a piece of luggage that has its own motive power, has its own engine built in? Like a little, at the moment we'd probably say like a two-stroke chainsaw motor or a little motorbike engine or something, and it pulls you along or whatever?
I don't think
a motorized skateboard.
No. I don't think it has to do that. It just has to be there for you. So let's go forward to 2050, okay? What's going to be important in your life at that time? Let's see, in 2050, you're going to be what, 45?
Yeah, young me, 45. So we're talking, I'll probably have teenage kids. So I think, you know, in terms of mobility, but you know, I probably need one of those bloody family thingos. There's family cars, big family car. A Tarago.
A people mover.
My people mover for my family band.
So you can do all the sport and music and things like that.
Yeah. Will it fly? That's what I want to know. Will it fly? When are these cars going to fly?
When are we getting the fifth element? Remember that? There was just traffic jam in the sky.
And that's the minority report where they...
That's right.
Just they went on the road without you having to do it and they just went there.
I like the amphibious ones, the amphibious cars of the 50s.
Let's have them.
Chris just rolled his eyes.
Yeah. I've got that face for radio. So what's it cost to get a driver's license in Australia right now?
Not much.
Is it still cheap?
Yep.
That's good. A lot of parts of the world, it's a couple thousand dollars to get that.
Dozens of dollars.
Just combine that with a pilot's license. Now put that all together and say, okay, these are teenagers doing this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not going to happen.
Nah. It can happen. I think the only there's interesting studies on flying cars. There's a fantastic one on what happens to the urban environment when cars fly, called Sky Car City. And they just gave us a presupposition that cars could fly, and then they said, well, what happens? What do you do with the streets? How would you design a building if people could come into it at every floor? A very interesting study. Anyway, probably right now in this day and age, we're far more aware of the energy that goes into our daily action and the idea that we're going to create a thermal footprint to make our butts fly around in the air is probably not so cool
it's
as it was in the 50s.
No, sky rage, that's coming. You don't want to see that.
No. Oh, boy.
Let alone air sickness. But, Chris, what do you think of the new developments, hybrid cars and then the all-electric cars that several manufacturers now are offering in the marketplace?
Well, you know, the view inside the industry is let's try not to lose too much money on this while we figure out what we're doing. They tend to be rather expensive to make.
Are they more a marketing statement than a technological innovation?
For a lot of companies, they probably are that. But having said that, any car company you look at is dedicating huge resources to it. Huge resources to it. And it will come. I'm convinced of it. I'm also convinced that the electric car is the absolute cleanest logical future for us. But I don't think it's going to be in the format, as you said today, big box going around. Why hasn't it evolved? I think the format will be completely different to make it efficient.
So smaller?
Shared. But think of it differently.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, your car's parked outside, all right? It's a good box full of your stuff. But that engine and those wheels, why do you need those?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if those engine and wheels have a life of their own, and they go off and serve somebody else, take their battery with them, then it's not just sitting there taking up space, et cetera, et cetera. It actually has a use. There are some studies that say there isn't enough lithium in the world to go more than, I don't know, X number of million cars. So where exactly are we getting these batteries for these cars? And we're really going to run power to every parking space in the world? You really think so?
No, very hard to understand. And the range, and even on the wildest optimist
expectations. It'd be much simpler to let the wheels and engines go off and power themselves, where somebody can check the tires, make sure they're good in shape, right? I mean, the gas station in the future might be a place where these things hide out. And when you say, go get the car, then your avatar, that happens to be your luggage too, goes and assembles it.
So like these shared bicycle schemes that we've just introduced here in Melbourne and are quite common in European cities, that's a model? That's a way of looking at it?
Well, it could be, but once again, far future, it's hard for me to imagine that we have to keep all this stuff into one organized entity. The USP, that means the unusual selling point, why you pay extra money for a Mercedes, a BMW, a Porsche. Those are called USPs. The USP for an electric engine and battery is zero. Hmm. They're all the same. It's not like, wow, really cool BMW six-cylinder engine, zackety-zackety. Wow, really cool Porsche flat boxer. Wow, really cool. No, it's just an engine that's the same. So why am I paying all this money for this device? And when I asked you what's important to you in 2050, if you've got teenage kids like that, maybe somebody to take care of your health is important. And wouldn't you rather have your Mercedes or your BMW come up, tuck you into bed at night, take care of you, than sit down on the sidewalk and just look pretty waiting for somebody to scratch it?
Well, yeah, I mean...
Hang on, so my car is tucking me into bed. So I'm very confused. So I'm here...
I knew you would like that.
...doing the show, and my car is outside. That's a waste of time. So its engine is off, perhaps helping someone with a bank robbery on the other side of town. But it'll be back here in time...
That was your engine.
When I go back down, will it have returned, or will another one arrive?
You get another one.
Another one. Sure. I have a remote, and then it comes over. How does that?
Well, just think how many things nowadays know your intentions. Okay, project ahead a few years. I mean, I'm asking you to project ahead.
I'm seriously projecting ahead.
Tomorrow.
I understand.
Okay.
So right. So it's a hit. It's got my schedule, and he's going to be back. He's going to be back down here in about 20 minutes. We better have something here for him.
How about that?
So something comes over from someone else who's wasting space and time over there.
Sure.
Okay, I'm starting to see it.
Yeah, it's a more efficient use.
Yeah.
Right? And let's say you only need yourself getting around today. So what do you need? You need, let's say, two wheels and a battery. The thing will balance by itself. Mm. Segway and GM put together a car that does that.
Right? What?
Segway and GM made a car that balances on two wheels.
Like those self-propelling, what were they called, hygroscopic or something?
Well, the company Segway is the one that makes...
It's on two wheels.
It's on two wheels.
It's not sideways like Diamonds Are Forever. That's not what we're talking about.
That would be cool.
That would be all day.
Particularly with a Mustang.
Just all day. It would be fantastic getting around like that.
James Bond has solved most of these problems, hasn't he? But in fact, they've never been legal in Australia for reasons to do with some of the obscure regulations affecting Australian
road
use.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But in this case... Let's say it's just you. Mm. You need two wheels, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's say you guys go together. We're going to need an extra set of pair. So you whistle up another set. I mean, the Japanese just made an 8-wheeled electric vehicle, did 300 kilometers an hour. So you just add these things on as you need them. You got to bring a load today. We'll put 6 wheels on it.
So like with trains, they add an extra locomotive to pull along a load.
Sure. And that way you don't have one engine. Let's say the engine you have in a car, you ask why they're so big? That car is designed for the worst case scenario when you're pulling a boat on a trailer up a hill in the summer with the heat, etc., right? Hmm. Most of the time, I need a fraction of that amount of motor.
No one's pulling a boat. Hardly anyone's pulling a boat. That's a waste of time. You're right.
Well, it's designed for that, though.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. You need that amphi car.
I just worry about the stereo. That's what I see my car. I think people are too obsessed with what their car looks like. People are obsessed in Australia with what their car looks
like. It's your ego on display.
But you're inside the car. It's the inside bit that's important.
But everyone's looking at your car to work out who you are. Isn't that how you sell them?
I guess.
That's why we call that a car avatar.
Right.
Not like the film from Cameron, but it's a projection of yourself.
Mm.
So this is what I'm saying. It's that car avatar, which looks sexy. It looks cool. You polish it. It's fantastic. That's what's tucking you in at bed at night, not this big, oily, smelly box that we have today, or at least some cars are.
But at the same time, a lot of the companies, including the one you used to work for, are working big on the nostalgia thing, going back in time and looking at some of the designs. Even gullwing doors are coming back, looking at some of the big designs from the 50s and 60s and saying we're going to recreate some of what was thought to be a golden era in automotive design and engineering.
Well, could very well be that if the great prophet was with us today, he would say, "Retro, you have with you always." But I'm not too sure about that. It kind of comes in waves. Let's put it that way. It comes in waves.
So that's just marketing?
Well, let's say a car like the Mini, where you had to reach back and close a 40-year gap in its production history. Obviously, it's going to look like you're reaching back because you have to make it respond to how the car was back in the 50s. Making a Gullwing again today seems, let's say, in my opinion, about 8 or 10 years too late.
Okay, because Citroën have done it with a new DS as well, right? They've just brought out, that's getting rave reviews in Europe.
Well, that's, I was particularly referring to the Mercedes, which I think was would be a fantastic car if it had come out in the year 2000. But nowadays, it's another issue. Gullwings per se, okay, interesting idea. Designers love to make freaky doors and things like that, but not exactly the solution of the future.
It's just because people just love those old cars, you know, and people like Mad Men, so they want to have a car. Like in the 50s, someone would be driving a car the size of a tennis court. It was ridiculous, but it looked great. Mm. There's a nostalgia for that. There's no nostalgia for, say, the car I drove for several years, the 1990 Ford Laser. Nobody's ever going to be going in the future, "Oh, that was a golden era. No. If only we could bring back that fantastic laser hatchback gear. Wasn't that a golden era?"
The Datsun 120Y.
But whenever you see an old movie where people are with those enormous yachts on wheels, they just look great.
Mm.
Ludicrously impractical and environmentally unfriendly, I'm sure.
Can I ask you, do you get frustrated with the pace of how we're developing automobile technology and design? Do you go, "Oh, this is what I'm gonna die before we get to this avatar that I want to see"? Do you feel like it's slow? I feel like it's slow, and I'm not even in that industry.
Yeah, some of it seems really slow, particularly when you reach out in the research and you do some fun things, and they come back and show you what you can do with it, and you go, "Whoa, that's really cool. What's keeping us from doing this tomorrow?
Yeah,
really. Why aren't we doing this tomorrow?" And then suddenly you bonk into that massive, amazing dinosaur of inertia that is what an industry is usually all about for its reasons. So you take a different tact. I've learned to take a different tact, try to look for the root causes of the inertia and chip away at that. We did a car made out of cloth. I don't know if you've seen it. It's on YouTube. It's called Gina.
Wow.
I haven't seen
cloth.
That. Cloth. Yeah, it's made out of cloth. All right.
That takes us back to the 30s when fabric-covered vehicles were light and cheap and taxed very lowly in Britain.
Does it shrink if you put it in the wrong cycle?
Don't get in the rain.
The Velorex. Do you know about the Velorex?
Was that it? Yeah. Was that it? No. Well, actually, you know, before, at the turn of the century, there are a lot of cloth car companies. Yeah, take a look at it. It's elastic surfaces, so they stretch and they move and the eyes open on it. And the doors have only one tiny cut line, and when they open up, it
very
wrinkles,
few injuries in an accident.
Comes
just
down.
Might get carpet burn.
You get bandages straight away off the skin of the car.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's kind of cool. Anyway, so we did it as an emotional exercise to try and understand how would you do cars differently to be emotional to you, to really take on an attitude and personality. But what we learned from it was, you know, the outside of a car, what do you need that for? The space frame can take care of all the safety. Right, all the crash forces can be taken care of by that. What do you really need the skin for? And what does it cost to get that in metal? And it turns out that a cloth skin can do just about the same job as the metal for 1/10 the ecological footprint, no matter how you measure it. Energy, CO2, acid rain, any way you measure it, 1/10 square meter per square meter. Right? But more importantly, you don't need those gazillion dollar tools to make the thing. And it's that huge investment iceberg under the water which is keeping you from getting the car you really want.
Metal presses and the like. So plastic cars in future?
Well, there's things like carbon fiber, which are very helpful.
Very expensive.
For light. Yeah, and they're learning how to pull the fibers out to recycle them, which is quite good. Most plastics have a very high petroleum component, which makes you kind of wonder if that's really a smart idea. But definitely you have to use them in the future. Different ways of doing it.
It's going to be fascinating to see. Safety is the other thing people always say that they want. And as you talk about technology and what drives a car in terms of energy, people also talk about making sure that it gets safer and safer. You said before cars are safer than ever, but I'm not sure that the pursuit of safety is over.
No, it's not. And there's two anecdotes, two sides to that. You remind me of this anecdote from a friend of mine from the GM days. He was one of these guys who would interview people for marketing research. It's a true story that a woman put down on research. The most important thing for her future car was safety. So they said, okay, and they went back, did airbags in the car, that kind of thing, you know, more door beams. He went back and re-interviewed her. And in the re-interview, he asked her, so what exactly do you mean by safety? And she said, oh, a place for my gun. Kind of be careful what people tell you sometimes. We have the, on a more serious note, we have a real big issue in the world that our concept of safety is better is inevitable and better is necessary. You cannot possibly produce a car next year which is less safe than the car a year before. Okay? Now, project yourself into huge areas of the world where they have massive transportation issues. India, Africa, China. Places like that, all right? Where if you try to solve everybody's mobility problem with the level of safety that we've come accustomed to today, imagine the amount of cost, size, everything that you automatically impose. But it's just not politically correct to talk about it in any other terms. You know, now that I'm not in the industry, maybe I can even open up the subject to a discussion. But it is fascinating when you look at that.
Well, and the effect on the industry of the fact that the American taxpayer, through the government, seems to own some of the biggest providers and biggest design houses in the world.
Well, if by that you mean General Motors, government motors now, I guess you're right. It remains to be seen what they do with it.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's my tax money at work. I should have a stronger opinion about that.
But. Will they continue to be a force in the future, or will China, India, and Europe take over?
Well, I certainly hope they do. I mean, I'm an old GM guy. That's where I started my job in Europe for them. So I have a little piece of my heart in those guys still. And I think there's really room for indigenous production of any form. I would hope to see there's an Australian super, super strong automotive, let's say, genre that the entire world can refer to and say, we love this because it really looks like this comes from that culture.
I think it's called the Ute.
Yeah, the Ute. Yeah.
The panel van.
For which there'll always be a need. In fact, in future the idea of a conventional car is left to people like tradies and builders and people who actually need that sort of thing to get around, whereas the rest of us kind of don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, do you have distances in this country which are huge?
Yeah.
How far do you come to work, you say?
It's about 60 kilometers.
Each way.
Mm.
Yeah, each way. That's not so bad.
But it's not unusual for holidays for people to go for drives of thousands and thousands of kilometers in Australia.
But once you're driving to work in a 16-seater stand-up cloth car that tucks you into bed, you'll be so much happier.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With a beeper to watch out for cyclists.
He's liking that idea. You can see that.
Especially the cloth.
It's been fascinating to pick your brains today. And, Chris, that's why you're here for the Design Conference. Thank you. Design legend Chris Bangle in Melbourne to speak at the State of Design Festival, talking about the future of personal mobility and other things. It happens tonight at the BMW Edge at Fed Square. And then he'll be speaking in Bendigo on July the 24th. And Eddie Perfect, there are still tickets for the South Melbourne Town Hall performance on Monday, July the 26th, with the Brodsky Quartet. Eddie Perfect, Chris Bangle and Tony Martin. It's been a fabulous Conversation Hour. Thank you very much. On 774 ABC Melbourne,
Thank you.
ABC Victoria, this has been the Conversation Hour.